I was thinking of putting some Christmas lights outside my house. I got all them, so I'll do that tomorrow. I'm not in a Christmas mood yet. I didn't see any mail for you.
Okay.
What am I supposed to do?
Well, I have to do a little introduction thing so I know what the tape's about. Today is, what's today's date? December 8th, 1995. And this is Karen Brewster, and I'm speaking with Sam Hobson at his home in Fairbanks. And what we're going to be talking about today is Harry Brower. So, kind of what I'm doing is some kind of a story about Harry's life because of what he talked to me about. He told me little bits and pieces from his life and different experiences and this time doing that and this time doing this other thing. But we never finished. So now what I want to do is talk to people who knew him and find out what they knew about him and what he was like and some of the things they remember about him, because I only knew him for a real short period of time, and I can't say that I really knew him, and I know you knew him for a long, long time, so that's why I wanted to talk to you. So I guess the first thing I would ask you is to kind of tell me a little about how you knew Harry, when you knew him, all that.
Me?
Yeah.
Well, how could I say this? How I knew him? I known him ever since he married my sister. That's been about, what, 50 years or so? And he was a subsistence hunter, and I used to go, take me along when he go hunting, when he goes fishing, caribou hunt. So ever since that, we've been doing it practically all our lives till he passed away. I was whaling with him. I was one of his crews. What else can I say?
Okay. So when other people ask you about Harry, or you tell your grandchildren or people who didn't know him, when you tell them about him, what do you say about him?
Well, as far as I can tell him is, he was a good support hunter, more like, and good carver. And he likes to help other people if somebody need food or anything. He share his hunting, whatever he catch, caribou, he share with the elders and all that. The elders come first in his mind a lot of times. If he see some families need food, when he gets some caribou or stuff like that, he's always ready to share it with them. So that's what I told a lot of kids, that, you know, always remember your elders and other people, help other people if you can, you know. So as I know, that's the way he was raised.
So, what do you think is important about Harry's life for other people to know about?
Well, let's see. Far as I know, he's... What can I say? Well, the only thing I know is his skill on hunting and trapping and whaling and... When he was working for the Arctic Research Lab, he was really, he had the most important role there. He had to go up in the mountains with some of the scientists and do a lot of research work. So he knows a lot about that. And he said he had walked that Brooks Range from Butter Island all the way down to wherever that Brooks Range ends, in Selawik or Kopuk or someplace, that Alaska Range, or Brooks Range. Yeah. So he knows a lot about the country, and he's got all the good fish camps, and he knows where to go during the fall or in the winter, you know, or to trap. And before he had to use dog team to travel around. I had traveled with him on dog team to go to trap line and go seal hunt in the winter. So that's what something maybe they should know anyway, those young kids, his grandkids.
Okay. So all those times you guys went out hunting together or whaling together, are there some particular stories that you remember you want to tell me about?
What particular stories can I tell you about? Well, when we were together, we mostly talk about hunting and things like happen to us or something like that. He had a lot of good stories about his hunting trips, and some are kind of scary stories, you know, what he encountered to polar bears and stuff like that. And he's always have a story about polar bear, whale, or seal, or foxes, wolves, you know, caribou. And
what about some of the times when you and he went out together?
When we went out together for caribou hunt, we always catch our caribou, is that what? And he showed me a lot how to skin caribous, you know, the easiest way and the best way. I learned a lot of that from him. And so, and foxes, he showed me how some of them. And those little squirrels, ground squirrels, we hunt those, we trap those, and he showed me how to skin those, and so they can make enough for the parkers and stuff like that. We always go geese hunt every spring, and so he knows where to go for his geese hunt.
Tell me about that caribou hunt you once upon a time went with him, and that caribou went after you.
Oh, on that movie?
Yeah.
Oh, that one. Well, the best part there, and when I got one of those movie cameras, that I told Harry I'd like to have a close-up movie of a caribou. So it was in the fall time, and some of those bull caribou were just straggling, and then they were just getting into the herds, you know, for mating, toward mating season. So we were camping, me and Kupak, and George Ungaruk was with us that time. So we had spotted a whole herd of caribou just moving toward us, something like that. So one day I told Harry, I said, I'd like to make a close-up movie of a caribou. He says, you wait and see, we will have a chance. So one afternoon we were camping and cutting up our caribou and getting it so it'll freeze and clean them. And there we spotted a bull caribou. He would, you know, and that time of the year, when you see something moving ahead of them, they go right up to you. So Harry said, well, here's your chance, Sam. You're going to take a movie of your caribou close-up. He said, just go out there, move around a little bit once in a while, and he'll see you, he'll start coming at you. So I was just a little way from our camp. So I stand there, once in a while I move around, he started coming at me slowly, he didn't charge, getting closer and closer, so I thought, that thing is getting close enough for me to take movies. It's silent movie, so I took a movie, and it started coming and coming. Getting closer and closer, he was about maybe 20 feet from me, and I didn't realize I was backing up. So Harry yelled back at me, hey, I want a close-up, don't move. I said, So I told him, I said, hey, it came too close for me. I got enough of it. So I had to back out of there. It never spooked anything. So George, he had a rifle ready just in case, I guess. But he said, well, I'll just shoot it here. So we got him right at the camp. And we skinned it. Meat was fat, good meat. So that was part of our caribou. And so.
What about whaling?
Whaling, I don't know where to start. There's so many exciting things that we do ever since I started whaling with Kupak.
When did you start whaling with him?
Oh gosh, Mabel, it's been about 15 years or more. See, we used to whale for my father, my dad, Steve Kupak, and me and Kupak's kids in a small. Mm-hmm. So when my father retired or quit whaling, he gave it to Harry, the equipment like guns and darting guns, you know, whatever he had.
And that was because of the oldest daughter.
Yeah, and the flag that we're still using with the whaling. So, and that's when Kupak took over and we start whaling. And I've been whaling with Kupak ever since, and up to now I'm still whaling, even though he's gone, but his oldest son took over. He's the third generation for the whaling and equipment. So
Kupak's wife, your sister?
Yeah, Kupak's wife Annie is my sister.
Was the oldest daughter. That's why Kupak got the equipment.
Yeah.
From your dad.
Yeah. That goes in the family, like that, and then, yeah.
He trusted Harry to take good care of the equipment that that he had, and Sam was too young yet to go by himself, or he did not live in the Barrow area.
No, I couldn't take him because I don't live there. I live in Fairbanks. I just go up for hunting and whaling.
And that included the use of the big ice cellar.
Okay.
That they had. That Pop had gotten from the weather bureau, I think, huh?
See, Mabel, you should come over here, so then you can be on tape. Can't hear you way over there.
So, that's...
Well, I remember Kupak telling me when he was a young man, he had a whaling crew.
Yeah. This whaling, when Kupak was young, was called Cape Smy Whaling Company, more like a company thing. His dad owns that Cape Smy Whaling and Trading, and I guess when he was still younger, they were still whaling for baleen, the company does, and then the muckduck meat and whatever they can salvage from whale were divided among their crew and share with the village people, you know. So, but the baleen goes to the Cape Smy Trading, and that's how it started. So his father used to have three or four boats out there, and he had to have some captains for them. So Harry was one of them, and Mabel's dad Dave was one of them, and I don't know if Tom Brower was there too. So there was three or four of them, the Brower boys or men, that in charge as the captains and co-captains, Arnold Browers and stuff like that. So that's how he started whaling, till he started his own in a few years ago, like I say, about what, 10, 15 years, when my dad's equipment took over, and he was, so he started having his own crew. Because mm-hmm. them days, there weren't too many whalers either, you know, where there was only maybe like those Brower crew, like three or four out there, and my dad is out there with his boat, and a few other famous whalers like Tallaght, and Tokpuk. Yeah, those are Okpiks, and you know, and so they were out there.
I was just listening to one tape with Harry, and he talked about how he lost his whaling gear in the ice, all that moving ice.
Yeah, that happened too. That was when my dad was whaling.
Mm-hmm.
But Kubak was with him, I guess. When that happened, I wasn't there that year.
Mm-hmm.
So I live in Fairbanks, and you know, I've noticed that when it's windy, we have to take our equipment and boat up on a safe ice.
Mm-hmm.
We figure it's safe, you know, way back close to the shore. So that certain time of the year, there were several boats out there. So the same thing happened. They had a bad wind coming in from, I think it's southwest or someplace, whatever. And they took all the equipment up to that place where they keep them safe, you know. The wind was so strong and the current was so strong, I guess it wasn't safe enough, but it was too late for them to move them again, you know. But next thing they know, the ice was piling up, breaking up where they were. It wasn't just Kubak and crew and them, it was several other boats. So three or four boats lost all their boats and equipment that year.
So was that, Kubak was a captain, that was his own crew, or he was just whaling for somebody else?
Well, Kubak was just whaling then when my dad, Steve Hobson Sr., at that boat that he lost. And so.
Okay. Yeah, because I got confused between when he was like a teenager whaling for Cape Smyth, and then in the 70s when he got your dad's equipment.
Mm-hmm.
Did he have his own crew anytime in between then?
No.
Okay.
No, he never have. Like I said, when he took over those equipment from my dad, that's when he started his own crew. I mean, as far as his family, like, you know, because he, you know. But Cape Smyth hadn't done whaling, but the Browers were all whaling for themselves then. It wasn't for the company. So like David Brower had his own crew, Tom Brower had his own crew, and Kubak have his own crew, Arnold Brower have his own crew. So they all, you know, separated like, but they're the captains of their whaling crew.
Right, but the Baleen went to the store.
But now the Baleen, half of it goes to the captain, and part of it goes to the whaling crews. Not only them, but they divide them up, you know. They shared a half a part to
this
each
was,
boat.
After the separation from Cape Smyth,
okay.
When the price of the baleen went down and they were no longer collecting baleen for the other companies.
Oh, okay.
Uh-huh.
That baleen business was out before my time, almost. I just barely remember when they used to clean the baleen before the breakup so they can store them and get them ready for shipment. And seemed like they were just, some of them were trying to catch big whales, you know, big bullheads. The bigger baleen, the better for them, you know, so. But some days you don't have much choice. You got to get what comes up first, you know. And
another story I remember Harry telling me about whaling was when there was a boat flipped over. And he went to the Gnarl guys to go get help. Were you there that year?
That he's talking about, I wasn't there, but I was getting ready to go there. It was spring whaling. I think it's the same one. They lost one whaler. So while they were there, these people were they seen this whale come up, and it was kind of choppy weather. It was good enough to go after. I think what they did, they didn't have much experience about getting to the whale, you know. So what they did, when they got to the whale, they got on him on the wrong side of the whale, something like that. Mm-hmm. And when they struck the whale, it came up with his flippers and tipped over the boat and dumped all the crew in the water. And so Kupa was one of the nearest crew that watching them, so they went down and rescued the crew, all but one. They couldn't get him. It was too late. And he had to, I guess if he don't have, if he didn't, the way he said, he probably drove his skidoo to the village for help. Mm-hmm. And they came down with a helicopter and took the some of the crew. A couple of them were pretty bad shape, you know, from water, froze water. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's how it happened. And they, all those young guys still remember Kupak for helping him. He put him in his tent and used up all the available blankets and sleeping bags he had in a tent to wrap him up, to warm him up and keep him alive. So ever since, up to now yet, when Kupak was alive, every time they see Kupak need help or anything, they out whaling camp, if he chasing whale, they're out there with him, helping him, or they haul some of the, after he catch the whale, they'll haul some of the whale that he was saving for the feast and stuff to the safe place. So he was the one that...
Was that the Levitt's crew? Levitt's crew?
Yeah, that was Alfred Levitt's crew. And now Johnny Levitt is took over. Alfred is just yakety-yacketing out there, you know, out in the shore. You know how he see be.
He's a supervisor at home.
Yeah, he's great up there. We miss him if we don't say anything on the CB. Those old timers that give you their experience, you know, you got to listen to them. You know, sometimes, you know, we might think we knew better than them, but when it comes to some little bit of trouble, we got to respect their what they say too, you know.
I mean, like Eugene always said, Kupak was the admiral.
Yeah,
he's the admiral. Eugene is a captain. Today he's a co-captain. And as far as Kupak was whaling and them, I'm a gunner. If I'm out there, I'm the first one to be on a gun on a boat. So that's that's the first time I shot the whale for Kupak, and that's the first time I used a shoulder gun for whaling. After 30 years of whaling, I never even shot a whale because I was more helper and, you know, get the experience went there and learning same time, so. But one year I was there at the right time and I shot the whale and we got the whale and they think, well, I'm pretty good now, I think, and they want me there all the time. But I always tell them, even though I'm there, if it's at the right time, I tell you, they've got experience now, don't wait for me, you know, things like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you are right there at the right time. Matter of fact, one time I had to give my gun to Eugene because he was on the right side to shoot the whale, things like that, so.
What about you and Kupak playing cribbage?
Oh, yeah, that gotta go in there too, huh? All right. Yeah, me and Kupak, every time we go hunting, we gotta have a cribbage board, and we play cribbage. Even at home, you know, Karen, every time we got a spare time or doing nothing, that's the first thing we do, play cribbage. that's part of it. We always tease each other, you know. We just like we were gonna go at it and have a big fight or something. It just worked. We back and forth. So we play just about around the clock when we were out geese hunting one spring. The weather was bad. There was no geese. So what we did, we just set up our tent and picked up our gear and went in the tent and started playing cribbage. And Eugene was supposed to meet us up there in one of the geese hunting camps up there or up in the river. That was up on Meat River. So we played starting early in the morning. It was the only time we break is for coffee or something like that. We played, and we must have played right to midnight and early in the morning, so finally got sleepy, and the wind was still bad. Geese weren't flying, so we went to sleep. And so first thing in the morning, or maybe in the afternoon, I don't remember exact time, Kupak decided to go out in the tent, see how everything was out there, and he went out there. He said, "Hey, Sam, this is Eugene is here." "What?" "Eugene is right there beside us in a small canvas wrap, fix himself up so he can crawl in and with a sleeping bag." So we were playing so hard that time, cribbage, and got so tired when we fall asleep, we didn't even hear the snow machine pulled in. You know, you can hear a snow machine about miles and miles. Mm-hmm. See, that's part of our cribbage came that did us. So we laughed, and Eugene laughed. He just looked in there. We both were like, we were like passed out, pretty, you know. And he said, "Well, I ain't going to bother them." So he just fixed himself a little tent and a canvas and sleeping bag. The weather was kind of warmish, windy, spring weather. So that was one of them.
So who won more?
I did. And Kupak will say he did. And so I don't lie, but I said I did. Little lie.
You got the last one.
So one time we were playing, and we playing with a regular cribbage board. So we were arguing again, and I told Kupak, "Hey, you're going the wrong way." "No, I'm not." "Hey, you said we was behind, now you're ahead. You're going backwards." So we argue. We finally settled down, and he said, "Wait a minute." He says, "After we finish this, I'm gonna show you something that don't cheat." So before the next day, he went to his room and brought out a cribbage board that says 29. You can't go backwards. You know, once you start from the end, you follow that. Right to the end. That's it, you know. You don't. So he said, "That's what we use." So anyway, that's what we were starting to use, because after we start playing so long and argue, you know, sometimes we don't know if we moved or, you know. So one time Zacharias came in while we were playing, and we started arguing, and we just argued like we were going to fight and call names or anything, call ourselves cheaters or something like that. Tell him he was so far behind, I couldn't see him. I had to wait for him, you know, and just tell him on Grippus. He was so behind in Grippus' game. "Hey, you're so far behind, I can't even see you. I'm going to have to slow down," or something like that, you know. Just Saki looked at us.
And then he skunk you one time.
Yeah.
So he was going to call me. He says, "I got Sam skunked."
Yeah, but, you know, skunky is a real terrible thing when you play Grippus. You tease a lot. Yeah.
So what's skunked?
That means you know, if you don't make your, if you only go as far as 80 and the other guy wins.
The last hole.
Oh, yeah. You haven't gotten around.
Yeah. That's what they call skunk.
Lap?
Yeah.
Okay. Like if Kupak was, if Sam was on the last hole and Kupak came from the last, from behind and won the game when he was in the last hole, he got skunked.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's what happened that way.
That's a sting hole. That thing is a sting hole. That one that on the, if you move, the creepage, if you move, you're going to go out, okay?
Uh-huh.
Okay, I need it. I needed six to go out, and I have to count first, something like that. So I only got five, and I got right to the last hole. They call that sting hole, and I, you know, I couldn't move or anything. Just because of this six, I mean five.
Right.
I got. I needed six to go out.
Right.
Right into the last hole. That's what they call sting hole. And Kupak is a. I had to count his, and I don't make it. But if I make it, I could have won the game, you know, by one hole, so, or 1 point. So that's what they call it. The skunk is the one that you couldn't make it around the last round.
Yeah, okay.
You go up about 80 or something like that.
And he
goes, yeah. Every time somebody comes in, hey, you have, I always say, if I skunk him, that really hurts. That really makes him mad sometimes. Did you smell something? What? He was skunked right here. And every time Prison comes in there, he always tries to help his dad. Sometimes I got nobody to help me or give me support. Even Mabel, my wife, she's against me when I play croupier. The only one that root for me is my daughter Maria when she's around.
So you were starting to tell about sometime when Zachy came in?
Huh?
You were starting to tell about...
Two.
Okay.
Anyway, it's ready? Anyway, we were right in the middle of our game. We were just getting hot to amongst ourselves, just arguing and see who was ahead more, and then that Jackie Sakurai walked in. And he looked at us, he kind of laughed once in a while, and then pretty soon we were getting worse, like, you know, and arguing and all that. Telling each other, trying to argue, you know, joking like that, you know. I told him I skunked him so bad he stinks, you know. You know, it's just, and Jackie looked at us, he thought, you know, these guys are going to get in a fight. So he just walked out. He just got up and walked out, you know, like we were, you know.
They were serious.
Yeah.
He thought
we were pretty serious, but we're never really serious. We're serious, but we just, the words we give each other were bad enough for people that are listening to make them believe that we're mad and something like that.
That was during their cribbage game. Then it dissolves when they quit playing cards.
Then we got to where we couldn't remember who won them more, so we start marking them down on a piece of paper. That 1 week we were up geese hunting that time, and so we just marked the winnings. If I remember right, I think he was one game ahead of me or something like that. Yeah, he's a lot of times he beat me, a lot of times I beat him, but it was in between, you know, we're both winners as far as ourselves. We never run myself down as a loser. We're both winners. And there's no loser between us. No matter how much you lose, you're still a winner. So that's the way we did it, and that's where all the fun is. Sometimes, you know, just like in supper, when you have supper around evening, right after supper, you know, you relax, and pretty soon you get the cribbage board on the table after it's cleared up and start playing, you know. So. So in Kupaka, passed away here a few years ago, and now I got a souvenir. Eugene and them, they were putting their things together, so they found this 29 cribbage board and said, "Uncle, here's the one for you." So I got that cribbage board called 29, so for souvenir from Kupaka.
That's nice. Didn't you also get one of the last boats he made? Didn't you also get his last baleen boat?
I got the last baleen boat for souvenir. That was made by Kupak. So I got it with my showcase, and I got the fishing bowls, well, ice fishing bowls made out of hardwood and ivory. I got that for souvenir. I'm using those. I catch a lot of fish with them. Anyway, then we got the sheep ivory carving that was given to Kupak from some ivory carver.
It came from Gamble.
Yeah, it's a beautiful set, but I always admired, so Eugene and them say I should keep that too, because, you know, so it'd be safer for them, you know, if we keep it for a show, you know. Mm-hmm. A lot of things that give
seen
it to.
It, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
There's two sheep fighting.
Yeah, I think I remember seeing it in this showcase. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really detailed. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and as far as the Kupak and me hunting, he showed me those landmarks. That country is flat when you look at it, especially when it's white out or when it's cloudy. And I used to follow him, and when he stopped, he told me what it is. I never remember the name, but I remember the landmarks that he showed me. Which way to go from there and all that. So that was another thing that I learned from him. So
yeah, I'm always amazed how people find their way around out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's you can get lost. I won't say I'm lucky. They think I'll get lost, but so far I've been pretty lucky. White out, I don't care how good you are, you get lost. You start going around circles. Same way Kupak, he's been going around circles.
Yeah.
Yeah, we got lost a couple of times. We never say we're lost. We always just say we went the wrong way. But, yeah, I was telling you about him how I first known him when he got married to my sister. So just a few years after they got married, Mabel and I got married. So every spring we used to go down camping down the coast after before breakup. And go work and seal hunting. So that's just about every year we used to go back, and Annie and the kids and me and Mabel were that time we didn't have any kids yet, newly married. The last time we had one of our oldest ones then too, camping, I think. So, and he taught me how to Ugaruk hunt hunt together, caribou hunt along the coast.
So, that time of year, how do you go Ugaruk hunting?
That time of the year, you go down there on the coast, you use skin boats or a little kayak, if you have a kayak. We had a little small boat, and you shoot the Ugaruk sometimes on the ice, you know, they lay up on top of the ice during the days, and when it breaks up, you go where it's kind of shallow, you know, not too deep, and you shoot them in the water. They sank, but you have a marker, like a little float as a marker. As soon as it goes down, you keep watch where it went down, and you sink that marker down and use it, you know, for it. And start using those sink hooks, like, you know, with the weight, the sink in the bottom, and you drag that in the bottom, and then you can feel the Ugaruk in the bottom when you get it, and you you snag them.
They're about what? Are they about that big?
Yeah, they're about 4 inches. Yeah.
Four hooks.
Oh, the
snag hooks. Yeah.
They're floats with like four hooks sticking mm-hmm. out.
Yeah.
What are they called?
Yeah, we use a lead on those to keep them down. In wintertime, or spring, when they float, you use a float, put a float on them, you know. If you don't have a boat or a kayak, you have one of those hooks with a long line.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You can throw it almost 50 feet, you know, if you do it right. Kopak was pretty good at it. And when you shoot the seal or ugaruk, it just float, and you just throw that line over it, pass it like that, over it, mm-hmm. and then you drag it real easy, and then as soon as you get to the ugaruk or seal, you snag it in, you know, with that point.
Mm-hmm. What are those called? The Inupiaq word for them?
Igilhaq.
Igilhaq?
Yeah.
Igilhaq.
Igilhaq. Igilhaq.
I got a dictionary.
Igilhaq.
There's another one.
There's another Niksik. Manak.
Manak. That's what I'm thinking of.
Manak is the one with a harpoon with a point on it. Or, you know, or that line for the float too. That's in that manak, yeah. Yeah, Igilhaq is that hook.
Oh, okay.
Manak. Okay, that's the whole name for that. Yeah, line and the hook is manak. Yeah, manak.
Okay. I don't know where my U was released.
Yeah, that's the name, manak.
Manak. Manak. That's the word I was thinking of.
Yeah. Uh-huh. I always call it, you know, there's a lot of words you can say. To me, I always say igilhaq.
That igilhaq doesn't have the long pole on it, though.
No, this one don't either. Manak don't have to have a long pole. Manak to go over and they even throwing.
Like that when you have that connected to the pole, and then it comes off?
That naulak.
Naulak.
Naulak is that one with a little thing you put on the pole when you put it in there. The pole comes up or the pole stays, but that thing flips, you know, mm-hmm. like a harpoon on the way, yeah.
Gee, I've had this since 1971.
Wow, that's an old dictionary.
Yeah, Abraham Stan gave it to me, looks like. Wow. June 30. And they probably when they first came out.
So do you have other favorite Kupak stories?
No, I got so many, but you know, a lot of little things. I don't know anything that interests people, but I always...
They all interest me.
Yeah, I always enjoy with them and have fun, you know. Just we always go fishing anywhere we can fish. That's like fishing tomcod when I go there. We go tomcod fishing. A good story about him, okay, about tomcod fishing. I was in Fairbanks. And he always called me and things start getting good, you know, hunting or mm-hmm. somebody gets something big or whale or somebody starts catching caribou. He's always on the phone telling me, hey, they're catching caribou. So one year I was here in Fairbanks and he was out there fishing those little tomcod, Ikaluwak.
Mm-hmm.
And he got a whole bunch of them. It was in the fall. It was just starting to freeze up. So I couldn't make it. So he says, Sam, he says, I just got a whole box of Ikaluwak. I'm going to send them to you and Mabel. She said, maybe tomorrow, next day, I'll go out and get some more anyway. So he sent me the whole thing he had. He didn't even leave anything. After he got them on the plane, and next morning he was going to go fishing, and the ice was gone. And he was gone for a long time. So he called back. Hey, he says, I never catch any more Ikaluwak, the tomcod. He says, there's no more ice. I said, Kupak, if you want some Ikaluwak or tomcod, just let me know. I'll send you some. Boy, that turned him. I got a whole box here. I can send some to you. he really went crazy about that. He said, "No way!" So that was something.
So you guys always teased each other. Oh,
yeah, we did that because that's what makes it so fun. You know, things always, you know, we just have to keep things going all the time, just teasing each other or something like that, you know.
Did you guys always tease each other? Even when you first met, you always teased each other?
Well, not really, no. When we first met, we were mostly seriously hunters, you know. We just, the only time we do have games and was when they're home or in our spare time where the weather's bad or, you know, that in our young days, we couldn't hunt on Sundays, so Sundays was always our days off at the camps. And we play cards, not only grippage. So one year we were playing cards, and the loser was going to swim in that lake that was right by our camp. It was, there was some ice in the bottom, but it was, you know, thawed out, you know. Mm-hmm. And guess who lost? It was me. So Mabel and Annie and Kubak and my folks came down to visit, and I was loser and playing pinochle, remember? So, and we started walking toward that lake. I had to take my pants off, my clothes off, my shorts, because I lost. If I don't go in there, I'd never play. They'd never play with me again, you know, or I'd never play with them cards again. So I had to jump in there. Oh God, it was cold. And Mabel took a picture of it. I had one of the first little cameras they had. I still got it someplace in there. Pile someplace from way back. The picture looks good. Muscular man in the water. Freezing. <out. laughs> Yeah, that was part of it.
So since then you guys just started teasing? Was it after that you guys just...
Yeah, well, a cribbage game didn't start not quite a while back, you know. We start off when they start whaling, you know. Out there, sometime when there's no whales, the weather, you stay out there and sit around, have one guy kind of watch, and you play cribbage, you know. Yeah, that's it. What else can we say about it? When he goes out there, Kupak, sometimes he never hardly goes to the village. He stays out there unless the weather's real bad, and we had to move our equipment to the safe place. Sometimes we'd pitch camp if we're about 3-4 miles from the village. We camped up there with our equipment and stay there and play cards until the weather gets better to go out. We don't dare go back to the village. So that's that one year that we talked about before, they had to go back to the village because the weather was so bad. Mm-hmm. And that's when the ice was breaking up.
So how come he never wanted to go back to town?
Oh, some people just hate to go back to town, you know. They'd rather be out there and have a good time. Because then they're working, you know. A lot of people, when they start working, they had to go to work. It's a good time for them to put in a few hours, you know, at work. And some time off they put in and extend their time off that way. So...
it's just so nice to be out in that country.
Mm. Yeah. Because it's easier for us to be there just in case, you know, you notice the weather sometimes changes so fast, and the current. So.
So I never knew Annie. What was she like?
She was nice, good mother. She works. She was more like a, what you call it, for the village, Mabel, what you call it, like social work, like and doing things for the village. She did a lot of traveling for the village or
school board.
Yeah, school board and stuff.
So what was it like with Annie and Kupak?
What do you mean by what, like, you mean how
they... How'd they get along, or how did they raise their family?
Well, before, Annie was more like a mother, housewife, when Kupak was just hunting. So Annie take care of the kids, you know, she do the sewing and cooking, a lot of things like that. On her spare time, she do a lot of other odd jobs, you know, so that's how they, and then... Biggest part of it was Annie was sick, struck with a tuberculosis, TB. TB.
He was in the sanitarium for.
And they had to send her out down to Chimawa or someplace.
No, it was at Tacoma where the sanatorium was at.
And Kupak had to take care of the kid. They had about five, I guess.
Up to Tom, Charlie. Charlie was the youngest one they had.
Charlie was taken care of by other family, and Kupak took care of their other kids. And he used to take them to the fish camp, take them along with him, and do some fishing for in the fall. And my grandmother was still able to do a lot of things, so she took care of most of the chores, like cooking or taking care of the kids or taking care of the fishing while Kupak is out doing other hunting. Other than fishing, so.
Yeah, I think Olaf was living over there at the time Annie was out.
So that's where Kupak was raising his kids, crapping, and every time he goes to the fish camp, had to take him along, and then after the fishing is over, they all go back to the village, to his house there, and watch him going to school and all that, till Annie gets well and back, so. Mm-hmm.
So your grandmother was Olaf?
Mm-hmm. Lottie, I love you.
Alice Solomon's mom.
Mm-hmm.
Your mom and Alice's
sisters. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And any mom was their brother.
Right. Okay.
And Jane.
Jane.
Ikawana used to be
Ikawana's first wife.
Oh, she was one of their sisters?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm. And Eunice Riley. She's the first cousin to Sam.
I don't know who she is either.
She lives here in town. She died quite a while back too, huh?
Who?
Jane.
Yeah, quite a way back.
That TB, I think, got the best.
No, appendix.
Appendix.
Yeah, appendix. Appendix. Bust down her horse. They were at their camp. Fish camp in Nepal. I was camping with Uliman. That's when he had Tommy and Curtis. And we were up further up, and Ikawana got a camp there just before they get to Mead River. There's a site here where it goes every fall. So he took his family there that fall, and I guess she got appendicitis. And you know, they don't have no CB or nothing.
Yeah.
The only thing you've got a dog team. So the only way she can do was he had to put her in a sled, head for barrel. It takes about maybe 3 hours.
Or more.
Yeah, maybe less, or where they are, depends how far you are. If the good trail or the good dogs, you could go about 3-4 hours. So he head for the hospital and back to the village. But it was too late. It had ruptured them, so that's how he lost her. But TB was mostly the thing that died, people died of them days. My mom, the same way, she died from tuberculosis. That's nowadays, you know, no problem, but them days it was.
Right.
If you think, if they think you're going to catch TB like myself, that's the reason, most of the reason I never went to school was because of that. They said I was catching tuberculosis, or, you know, so I had to stay home and I had to rest every hour, 1 hour every, some Monday, three times a day mostly. I had to have a rest hour and stay out of, I was like quarantined from other people, like, you know. And so we had to, what they do, you know, they we boil utensils for, you know, for that purpose, you know. So I didn't get worse. I as I go along, I got better and healed, and I've been like that since now, up to now, 67 years.
You're 67 years old?
Anyway, so that's why I never went to school, for that purpose. And then most of the time we're always out in our hunting camp, you know. Like Cape Simpson was our main home when we were growing up. My dad built a cabin there for us, for the family, in Amawak. That's where we used to live. So as we grew up, we moved to the village, and I went to school a little bit. Didn't finish my grade school either. So.
Did Uncle Harry ever talk about herding reindeer?
No, not really.
Cool.
I don't think.
Kupak never heard reindeer.
At Uncle Tom's place?
No.
No, just corralling maybe, when they were.
Yeah, he goes up for
butchering
time. Kuba was mostly at home with his dad. He was trapping mostly for him too. Before he got married, and did a lot of hunting. And then he goes with Agiak when Agiak got married. Before he got married, he used to, like me, when he got married to my sister, I go with Kuba wherever he goes sometimes. And Kuba was the same way when Agiak married Mariah. They go camping and trapping some out of the village. So,
how about when he was gathering some birds and stuff for his dad to be sent to?
For the museum. Yeah, he did that for his dad. Yeah. Every summer or spring they go up, they walk up inland, they talk to him and spend most of the summer up there bird hunting and eggs and all kinds of species that they can find.
He mentioned it a little bit, but not a lot.
I know every spring that most of the Browers, I guess, used to go inland, even Rex.
Avakana?
Because I remember him and Dad used to go out too.
Yeah, Kupak.
Kupak also went there.
Yeah, Kupak knows that country, that land up there very well, because then he joined the Geological Surveyors, when they were surveying Alaska on Brooks Range, North Slope. So he went with them all over that country up there, mountains. There's markers all over where they went through. And he built that camp at Peters Lake for Arctic research. And he spent most of his time, he had some time doing carpenter work and hunting and research.
So he'd be gone all summer?
Sometimes, practically all summer sometimes.
This part of this getting the bird sense was probably before he got married.
Yeah, I think that's when he was a kid.
But he was, I think he was already married when he went with the surveyors.
Yeah,
because that was a job. He was getting paid for it, all that.
He Yeah, I remember him telling me, I don't know if I have it on tape, and Eugene mentioned it to me when I talked to him a couple weeks ago, that Kupac was out on that survey, came in, got married, and went right back out.
I don't remember how it all happened, but I know that when there's work, when they're hired out to do some kind of work, it might have been like contractual.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure, but I think it was something that they had to do in the summer during the warmer months. And I don't know if they ever did any of that in the winter.
I don't remember him saying.
I remember him talking about the San Marcos way up close to Vinatay and that area where there was some near the Canadian border and stuff like that.
He did a lot of work for the scientists, and he goes with them, even up to ice, T3, they call that, up on near North Pole.
Mm-hmm.
He spent a lot of time out there.
Out on that icebreaker.
Yeah, he went on a ship sometimes and went with them. So, he was like a, he was almost like a commander when he went with them, because he knows a lot of things that they don't know, you know, about
ice conditions
land
and
stuff.
And whatever. I probably should have listened more when he was talking about the survey and stuff. He was mentioning some markers that if we ever went that way, we'd probably find them.
Yeah, he was a carpenter for the Arctic Research after all the surveying when he came back, and then that's when he spent most of his time in the village. He stayed at the camp. All that work that been done is mostly by Kupac.
And then they got some of those live animals. That,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. He put in many years with Arctic Research, and so when he finally retired, so the Navy commander was up there and asked him what he'd like for his retirement. So that time, when we were whaling, we don't hardly have any, what they call the flocking tackles. And we got these small ones. Sometimes you have to use two of them to pull the whale up, you know, they're so small. So cool.